What is going on, everybody, and welcome back to the channel. Tonight we have a terrifying story about this guy who's not even off his rockers, not off his meds, but he keeps seeing these horrifying images down across the street from his apartment window that change whenever it passes through this light. And then once it leaves back into the darkness, it's back to normal. Whether it's a car, a person, a baby stroller, whatever it may be, when it goes under this light, he, and only him, sees something else. Anyways, subscribe if you're new. Turn off the lights. Grab a Pepsi or a Dr. Pepper or a Modelo, or whatever your fancy is. And let's get spooky. It all started after the accident. That's the official story, anyway. The one my doctors like. The ones my parents cling to. A simple narrative. A bad turn. A slick patch of road. And a concussion that rattled my brain like a marble in a tin can. Post-concussive syndrome. And visual preceding anomalies. He showed me diagrams of the temporal lobe and pointed to fuzzy spots in my MRI. He told me it would take time. The flickering lights, the occasional vertigo, the moments of disassociation. It was all just my brain's wiring trying to reconnect itself. I believed him. For a while, I really did. It was easier than the alternative. The streetlight is at the very end of my block, just before the road curves out of sight. It's an old one, the kind with a high cobra-like neck and a sickly orange-yellow glow that always seemed to hum louder than all the others. During the day, it was just a piece of municipal furniture. But at night, from my third-floor apartment window, it becomes a stage. The first time I saw it, I dismissed it. A man was walking his dog, a little terrier of some kind. They passed under the cone of light, and for a split second, the dog's legs seemed to multiply. Not a blur of motion, but a clear, distinct image of a creature with at least a dozen spindly legs, skittering along the pavement like a centipede. I blinked hard, rubbing my eyes, and when I looked again, it was just a man and his four-legged dog, trotting along as if nothing had happened. A visual anomaly. My damaged brain misfiring. I took my meds and went to bed. But it kept happening. Each night, a new private theater of the impossible played out under that jaundiced glow. A teenager on a skateboard rolled into the light, and for the 2 or 3 seconds he was under it, the skateboard became a long, undulating eel of wood and urethane, propelling him forward with fish-like flicks of its tail. A woman pushing a stroller saw the baby carriage transform into a gurgling, ornate terrarium filled with pulsing, bioluminescent fungi. The woman herself didn't seem to notice. Her face illuminated by her phone as she pushed this impossible object through the light and out to the other side, where it seamlessly snapped back into being a normal stroller. They were elaborate, detailed hallucinations with their own internal logic. A logic I couldn't comprehend. I started keeping a journal, documenting everything. October 14th. Watched a couple arguing under the light. As they were more heated, their heads elongated, stretching upwards like taffy until they were just two long, writhing columns of flesh with screaming mouths at the top. the moment they had stepped out of the light. They were just a normal, angry couple again, storming off in opposite directions. October 22nd. A pizza delivery car pulled up. The driver got out and went to a door. While he was gone, the car, bathed in that orange light, slowly unfolded itself. The wheels retracted, the chassis split open, and it rearranged its metal and glass into a colossal, multi-faced insect. It looked like a beetle made of chrome and safety glass, its headlights glowing like compound eyes. It just sat there, flexing its new limbs, until the driver came back. As he approached, it folded itself back into a car with a sickening, grinding, wet sound just before he opened the door. November 5th. Tonight was quiet. A plastic bag blew under the light. It filled not with air, but with what looked like a dense cluster of human teeth chattering silently. It tumbled out of the light and was just a plastic bag again. I tried to prove it. I set up my phone to record the street, leaving it on the windowsill all night. I'd watch something new, absurdly unfold. A bicycle melting into a puddle of shimmering liquid chrome that then slithered away before reforming on the other side. And I'd feel a frantic, vindicated excitement. I have it! I have proof. But when I played the footage back, there was nothing. Just grainy nighttime video of a perfectly normal street. A man walking a dog. A teenager on a skateboard. A car parked by the curb. The camera saw what everyone else saw. Only I was privy to the madness. The doctors were kind but firm. They upped my dosage. They suggested therapy for anxiety and trauma. My parents would call, their voices strained with a pained sort of patience, asking if I was seeing things again. My world shrank to the dimensions of my apartment. And the focal point of my entire existence became that window and the sickly orange circle of light on the pavement below. I was losing my mind. There was no other explanation. I was a young man with a faulty circuit in his head, watching the world short-circuit in ways only I could see. I was alone in it, completely and utterly alone. Until I saw the paintings. They started appearing on the brick wall of the warehouse opposite my building. It was a popular spot for street artists, usually covered in layers of tags and bubble letters. But one morning, there was something new. A large, detailed piece, done in spray paint with an incredible level of skill. It was a dog. But it wasn't just any dog. It was the centipede dog, its dozens of spindly legs rendered in perfect nightmarish detail, skittering under a halo of orange-yellow spray paint. My heart hammered against my ribs. It was too specific. A coincidence of that magnitude wasn't possible. The next week, another piece appeared. The couple with their necks stretched into impossible screaming columns. The week after that, the chrome beetle, its multi-faced eyes staring out of the brick with a lifeless mechanical menace. Someone else was seeing it. I became obsessed. I stopped watching the light and started watching the wall. I needed to find who was doing this. For 3 nights, I barely slept, just drank coffee and stared out my window, waiting. On the 4th night, around 3 a.m., I saw a figure. a person dressed in dark clothing, carrying a heavy bag, moving quickly and quietly towards the wall. I didn't even think. I threw on my shoes, grabbed my keys, and was out the door and down the stairs in seconds. By the time I got down to the street, the air was cold and sharp, and I could hear a faint rhythmic hiss of a spray can. I rounded the corner of the warehouse, and there he was. He was thin, wiry, with dark smudges of exhaustion under his eyes that were visible even in the dim light. He looked like he hadn't slept in a month. He was working on a new piece. The woman pushing the terrarium stroller full of glowing mushrooms. He was so focused, he didn't even hear me approach until I was only a few feet away. "You see it too," I said. It wasn't a question. He flinched, spun around, can in hand like a weapon. His eyes were wide, panicked. He looked me up and down, then his gaze drifted past me, up towards my apartment building, and then to the streetlight at the end of the block. A flicker of understanding, or maybe recognition, crossed his face. The tension in his shoulders eased, but only slightly. "See what?" he asked, his voice a hoarse whisper. "The art? It's just art, man." "No," I said, stepping closer. I pointed a trembling finger at the wall. "That, the dog, the car. I see them. I seen it happen, under the light." He stared at me for a long time. His eyes searched my face, looking for something. Deception, maybe? Or maybe the same brand of madness he felt in himself. The silence stretched, broken only by the distant hum of the city and the closer, louder hum of the streetlight. Finally, he let out a long, shuddering breath he seemed to have been holding for weeks. He sagged against the wall, dropping his bag of cans with a clatter. "Thank God," he breathed, the words fogging into the cold air. "I thought I was the only one." His apartment was directly across from mine, one floor up. He was in a chaotic studio, canvases stacked against every wall. A fine mist of paint dust coated every surface. But the prime real estate, the space directly in front of the large window overlooking the street, was clear. A worn-out armchair was positioned there, a small table beside it covered in sketchbooks and empty mugs. It was a mirror of my own setup, a twin observation post for the same silent nightly horror. He didn't have a head injury. He wasn't on any medication. He was a freelance graphic designer and street artist who worked late and slept little. He had lived in that building for 2 years, but only started noticing the changes, as he called them, about 6 months ago.
"At first it was small stuff," he said, flipping through one of his sketchbooks.
The pages were filled with frantic, detailed drawings of the things I had seen. The eel skateboard, the bag of teeth. He had captured them perfectly.
"A cat's tail would split into three for a second. A hubcap would spin off of the car and sort of hover, like a little UFO, before snapping back into place. I just thought I was tired seeing things."
He paused on a sketch of a man whose head had been replaced by a furiously ringing old-fashioned rotary telephone. The man's hands were clasped over where his ears should have been, his body language a portrait of agony. I remembered that one. It was from a few weeks back. The sound had been the worst part. I hadn't heard it with my ears, but I'd felt it in my teeth, a piercing phantom ring that made my whole skull vibrate.
"I saw that," I whispered, pointing at the drawing. I heard the ringing.
He looked up from his book, his bloodshot eyes locking with mine.
You heard it? It wasn't a real sound?
I know, it was in my head, but it was there.
The psychics are all wrong, he said,
more to himself than to me.
The anatomy is fluid. It's like dream logic, you know? In a dream you could be in your childhood home, but it's also a spaceship, and it makes perfect sense until you wake up. That's what this feels like.
For hours, we just talked. We traded stories, compared dates, described the impossible things we had seen. Every bizarre, terrifying vision I had privately cataloged as evidence of my own insanity, he had seen too. He had drawn it, tried to capture its impossible form on paper or brick. The crushing weight of the loneliness I had been carrying for months began to drift, replaced by something far colder and more terrifying. The certainty that this was real. Why us? I finally asked, looking from his exhausted face to the window, to the orange glow down the street. Why are we the only ones who could see it? He shrugged, rubbing his tired eyes with paint-stained fingers.
I don't know. Maybe we're just wired differently. Maybe we're broken in the right way. You had an accident. Me, I don't sleep much. I live half my life in that weird state between being awake and dreaming. Maybe our brains are just receptive to the signal.
The next few weeks were different. The fear was still there, a constant low hum in the back of my mind. But it was no longer the sharp, isolating terror of madness. It was a shared fear, which made it bearable. Most nights, I'd go over to his apartment. We'd sit in the dark, him with his sketchbook, me with my journal, and we'd watch the stage below. We were like two scientists observing a phenomenon no one else on Earth knew existed. We started to see patterns. The transformations were getting longer. What used to be a split-second flicker now lasted for several seconds, sometimes for the entire duration of the transit under the light. They were also getting more elaborate, more grotesque. A city bus passed under the light, and for a full 10 seconds, it became a great lumbering beast of flesh and bone. Its windows were like rows of weeping eyes, and its rubber wheels became thick padded feet that left wet, steaming prints on the asphalt. People inside were visible as shadowy lumps, jostling around in its cavernous, rib-lined interior. Then it rolled out of the light and was just a bus again, its taillights disappearing around the corner.
It's getting worse, he said one night, his voice tight.
We were watching a mail carrier stop to sort letters under the light. The man's hands suddenly melted and fused together, his fingers branching and weaving into a complex fleshy lattice like a human basket. He continued his work, manipulating the letters with his horrifying new appendage, his face a mask of placid indifference.
The earlier stuff was weird, almost whimsical, he continued, sketching furiously. Remember the hat that turned into a bird and flew away? Now this, a bus made of meat? A man with hands like a wicker chair? The tone is changing. It's getting angrier, more violent.
That's when he told me his theory. He had been working on it for a while, he said. It was the only thing that made a kind of terrible sense. It's dream logic, he began, not looking up from his paper. The rules don't apply. Things change. Things become other things, and no one inside the dream ever questions it. The woman with the terrarium stroller, the guy with the phone for a head, they don't react. Because to them, in that moment, it's normal. He finally looked at me, his gaze intense.
We're not watching our world get weirder. We're watching someone else's. We're inside a dream, and the dreamer is having a nightmare.
The air in the room grew thick and cold. I stared at him, my mind refusing to process the words.
A dream? Not a hallucination?
That's insane, I said, but the words felt hollow. My own diagnosis had been insane, but this felt different. It felt like a key turning in a lock I didn't even know was there.
Is it? He countered, his voice low and urgent. Think about it. Why could only we see it?
Because we're lucid. We're the part of the dream that's starting to realize it's a dream.
Your concussion, my sleep deprivation. It's like it knocked us loose from the narrative. We're bugs in the code. We're not supposed to be noticing the scenery changing.
He stood up and started pacing the small apartment, his movements agitated.
And the nightmare is getting worse, more intense, more visceral. Whatever is dreaming us is not resting easy, and that leaves us with two possibilities, neither of them good.
He stopped in front of the window, silhouetted against the city lights.
One, the dreamer wakes up.
He let the words hang in the air. I thought about what had happened to the characters in your dreams when your alarm goes off. They don't go anywhere, they just stop. The world they inhabit, the logic that governs them, it all dissolves into nothing in an instant. Our entire existence, this whole neighborhood, maybe the entire world, could just switch off.
What's the second one? I asked, my voice barely a whisper.
He turned back to me, and the look on his face was one of pure, distilled dread.
The second one is worse. The dreamer doesn't wake up. The nightmare gets so powerful, so absolute, that it breaks through. It becomes the new reality. The dream stops being a dream and just is. All the things we see under the light, the chrome beetles, the flesh buses, the melting people, that becomes the baseline. That becomes the new normal. And everyone will just accept it. Everyone but us.
A wave of nausea rolled over me. I looked out the window at the street. It was just a street. Cars passed, people walked. But now it all looked so fragile, so temporary. A thin veneer of normalcy stretching taut over a roiling abyss of incoherent horror. We fell into a grim routine. Every night, we kept our vigil. The artist stopped painting on the street.
No point, he said. It's like trying to describe a hurricane by painting a single drop of rain.
His sketchbooks grew darker, filled with images that made my stomach churn. A flock of pigeons landed under the light, and their bodies split open, disgorging writhing tangles of wires and spark circuits that chirped and fluttered before they reformed and flew off. A fire hydrant unscrewed itself from the pavement, grew a set of brass spider legs, and skittered down the block before planting itself in a new spot. I saw a police car pull someone over directly under the light. The two officers who got out were wrong. Their limbs were too long, moving with a jerky stop-motion gait. When one of them spoke, his jaw unhinged clear down to his sternum, revealing not a throat, but a spinning vortex of rainbow-colored light that emitted a sound like grinding static. The driver then pulled over, simply handing him his license and registration into the vortex completely unfazed. The artist's theory felt less like a theory and more like an observation with every passing night. We were commentators at the apocalypse, watching the world end one surreal, nonsensical transformation at a time. We talked about running, getting in a car and just driving until we were somewhere else. But we both knew it was pointless. How do you run from the inside of a dream? You'd just be taking the dream with you. Last night was the worst. A young woman was walking home, her footsteps echoing in the quiet street. She stopped under the light to check a message on her phone. As she stood there, bathed in the orange glow, she began to unravel. Literally. Her form loosened, the threads of her being coming undone like a cheap sweater. Her skin, her clothing, her hair, it all unspooled into long, shimmering filaments that drifted in the air, connecting only to a single pulsing point of light where her heart would have been. For a moment, she was just a beautiful, terrifying constellation of herself, a human form deconstructed into pure thread. And then, just as slowly, she was woven back together. She blinked, put her phone back in her pocket, and continued on her way, never knowing she had ceased to exist for a full 30 seconds. The artist didn't even sketch it. He just sat there, watching, his face pale and clammy. "It's getting more stable," he whispered after she had gone. "The changes are holding for longer. The dreamer's mind, it's focusing, honing the nightmare." Which brings me to tonight. To right now. I'm in his apartment. We've been here for 2 hours, not speaking, just watching the street light. It feels different. The air itself feels heavy, charged with a strange electricity. For the last hour, nothing has happened. The street has been empty. The silence is more nerve-wracking than the transformations. It feels like the quiet intake of breath before a scream. Then, a garbage truck rumbles down the street. It's a big industrial vehicle, loud and solid. It slows, its brakes hissing, and stops directly under the light. And the transformation begins. It's not fast. It's not a flicker. It's a slow, deliberate, grinding metamorphosis. The metal groans and softens, the hard angles of the chassis rounding out, taking on the texture of gray, mottled skin. The big hydraulic arm on the side detaches and begins to move on its own, its claw snapping like a pincer as it scuttles around the main body. The tires bulge and flatten, becoming thick, fleshy pads that seem to suction themselves to the asphalt. The whole truck is becoming some kind of colossal, slug-like creature, its engine rumbling deep into a wet, gurgling breath. And it's not changing back. It's just sitting there under the light, a permanent fixture of impossibility. The artist and I are frozen at the window, side by side, watching this new, solid reality establish itself on our street. My heart is a cold, heavy stone in my chest. He was right. It's breaking through. And then we hear it. It's not a sound that comes through the window. It doesn't travel through the air. It comes from everywhere at once. From the floorboards, from the ceiling, from the very bones of the building and the fillings in our teeth. It is a slow, deep, impossibly vast sound. A bass rumble that resonates on a scale I can't comprehend. It's the sound of continents shifting, of glaciers cracking, of a throat the size of a galaxy clearing itself. It is a slow, colossal, cosmic yawn that shakes our entire world. The glass of the windowpane buzzes against my fingertips. The artist just looks at me, his face pale, and whispered,
"I think it's waking up."